This is the Day Zero update for October 2nd, 2016. I'm Filippo Dinolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Chris Elogi.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
And before we get started with pretty much the entire show, I want to give a shout out to a friend of the show and fantastic indie developer Thomas Hatt, going through a bit of tough times right now.
Yeah.
We've got the article linked, his blog post linked in the show notes. He's having a bit of medical issues with his son. He's been diagnosed with carnicterus, which happens when your doctor doesn't properly diagnose or fails to diagnose infant jaundice. So, yeah, that's not good.
No, yeah, it's a good thing the game sold well enough to help pay for these bills and such.
Yeah, that's the only thing, you know, positive thing that is coming out of it is that at least he's able to afford it for the moment. It's never great when medical issues come up, especially for a kid.
No, yeah, my son had jaundice when he was young, and this is one of those things where we were very lucky that it got diagnosed, and my heart goes out to him just as a dad. I mean, it's anything that happens to your kid. The thing about having a kid is it's like having your heart permanently existing on the outside of your body. And there are just things that, you know, stuff like this happens and nothing you can really do. And you just try to roll with it, but it doesn't make it any harder. There's not a father out there who, when their kid, anything happens to him that isn't thinking, I'll trade places. So my heart goes out to him.
Yeah. So if you want to, help out Tom and make sure he's able to afford those medical bills, would like to remind you guys that the Xbox One version of Axiom Verge came out on Friday. So go ahead and pick that up as I'm going through the checkout process right now. I'm picking it up for myself.
And the Wii U version came out a few weeks ago as well.
Yeah.
And it's a great game unto itself. I mean, you will not regret picking it up.
No. Yeah, it's a fantastic game. It was our game of the year for 2015. And, you should totally pick it up like I'm about to do it.
A hell of a good cause attached to it now.
Yeah. So, yeah.
All the best to Tom.
Yeah, just wanted to make mention of that. So I guess we'll move on from that sad story. We'll move on to what we've been playing. Pat, you want to start us there?
Starting with that, Pete.
I can't words today.
I've been playing some more fighting games. King of Fighters 14 just continues to dominate my focus. Playing a team of that includes two grapplers in a King of Fighters game is always going to be very time intensive.
Yeah.
And this is no different, but it's so rewarding. I can't stop. It's just, this is really one of the best times I've ever had playing King of Fighters, and just being, surrounded by other local players for the first time, pretty much ever, for that series, and watching those guys come up and grow as players is a great experience. I'm glad that SNK really delivered a game that that can attract new players like that, because the series has always been that good. It's just been a matter of getting the word out.
Yeah.
So I'm having a great time with that. Also, Guilty Gear Xrd Revelator, which I picked up last week on the flash sale, continues to be outstanding.
Yeah.
I still need to watch more of the story mode, but that'll probably be on my next days off.
Yeah. It's kind of neat. You get a full-blown anime just stuffed on there.
Yeah, like if you got Guilty Gear Xrd Sign, that was the first season.
Yeah.
And these were like full anime episodes. It was a proper season.
Hmm.
And then Revelator is the second season, of course.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of finding the time to sit down and watch it, because I haven't really been able to binge watch a lot lately. So,
yeah.
But, you know, Arc System Works is really onto something great there. That this is the Guilty Gear anime we've needed for years and years. And I'm glad to see that they're finally taking that approach and really finding quite an interesting place to implement it in an actual game story mode.
Yeah.
Because this is something that I could see like Adult Swim picking up if it got dubbed.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I've been playing some Heaven's Ward because 3.4 came out, and that's been a lot of fun. I still got to gear up a little bit before I can get into the new dungeons, but that'll probably come in the next few days. So,
yeah.
It's just one of those constant presences in my gaming life.
Yeah, it's one of those things you can just, you know, jump into, play a few hours, and just relax a bit. Yeah, we all have those games in our, you know, back pocket that we just always go back to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is definitely one. So how about you?
So now that I've just finished buying Axiom Verge, I'll probably be playing that later today.
Excellent.
This week I've been playing Brutal. I did manage to get to Dungeon 7, and yeah, pretty much every room at that point becomes an asshole room. So, yeah, and like, I'm wondering, how much harder can it possibly get? Because, I mean, there's 24 dungeons.
Don't ever ask that.
It's like, okay, yeah, I think I'm going to have to send them a message over to Richard, going, yo, what's wrong with you people? Yeah, they made a hard game. So, but I'm still tremendously enjoying that. Now that I've got my head around how all the systems work, it's becoming a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So about that, I'm just about done with Zenith. That game is weird. So, I did mention the singing spiders at one point. Yeah, that's how you start, basically. Then you got the catapulting elf. Yeah, okay. At one point, I take on a quest from Goku. Yeah, he's in there. It's basically a game.
Just straight up. No,
just straight up. No fucks given. It's Goku. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he's there. Pretty sure I ran into Cloud at some point. So it's like, yeah. As close to IP infringing as they can possibly get without actually doing it. It's basically one of those games about, well, basically the basic storyline is you're basically this 30-something mage, and he's trying to protect a magical artifact from falling into the hands of angsty teenagers who are bent on saving the world.
I like it.
So you kind of know what kind of game you're getting into, and it's definitely one that's worth checking out. It's got some rough edges. Like, you remember last week I was talking about text not appearing on screen? It turns out it actually was appearing on the screen. I didn't notice it until I looked at some screenshots I had taken. The text is there. It's just on top of the background, and there's no drop shadow. There's nothing. It's like they didn't manage to do it properly there. So, yeah, they kind of need to do some little optimizations there. Frame rate gets a little wonky at times, but yeah, it's a fun game. Should probably check it out. It's on PS4. Review will probably be up tomorrow.
How much is it?
It's about $20, I think.
Yeah, I think it's 20.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a full-blown action RPG, so you know, there's a lot of content there.
Cool. Yeah. Definitely sounds like an interesting one.
Yeah. So there's that. And I've been playing a little bit of Street Fighter V now that the patch has come out. Urien is an asshole. Let's just you know, why mince words? So, yeah. Luckily, for some reason, I only ran into a handful of them online. But the ones that I did actually run into seemed to know what they were doing. So, yeah.
Urien's pretty much tend to fall into two categories right now. You've got the ones who probably made him in Third Strike and know all of the crazy shit that he's actually capable of.
Yeah.
And then you've got the ones whose only Aegis combo is medium punch, medium punch, medium punch, medium punch, medium punch, medium punch. Yeah.
Yeah.
And even that gives them some pretty good mileage.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice to see the first season wrapping up. The CPU versus is in there, but as far as I can tell, it doesn't actually reward you with fight money. So, you know, it's there if you want it, but you're not going to be able to, like, grind away matches to get anything. So,
one thing I notice about Yurian that I really like is that he's a very different presence on the roster stylistically than anyone else that's been added yet. Like, his zoning actually works.
Yeah.
And you can play a very defensive-oriented style with him as a result, whereas you have a lot of characters that seem at first like they can zone, but a lot of that stuff is just kind of decoration.
Yeah.
Considering that this is probably as close to Super Turbo as we're ever going to have again.
Yeah.
So.
So makes me wonder what they're going to be doing for season two, because, you know, we all know there's going to be a season two.
Yeah, we all know there's going to be a season two. I think they've done a pretty good job of hinting at the characters that will be in season two. But, you know, at this point, I could actually at some point see them fine-tuning and releasing en masse the dolls.
Yeah, because they kind of, you know, sort of had their own individual presences in the story. So, refining those could probably be pretty fun.
Yep. And a lot of them came out very, very unique in how they played. So,
yeah,
that's something that they could do.
Yep. So, that's been my week. How about you, Chris?
So I managed to get in on the Forza Horizon 3 $20 price mistake over at Target.
Nice.
And so I got a chance to actually play a game I wasn't expecting to anytime soon. And that game is definitely more the same.
Yeah.
Which is good, but
yeah,
we could have had another Project Gotham.
Yeah, for not having played the second game, having just played the first, this is a lot of the same stuff, just more focus on off-roading. And it's really nice to be able to just say, well, there's the marker straight ahead. I'm just going to go straight at it instead of following the roads. And end up going a lot of jumps and things like that.
Yeah.
And,
well, that's a Horizon tradition.
Yeah.
Yeah. And especially nice to have it reward a lot of destructibility and stuff, especially when it comes to earning things like skill points, where you end up running into a lot of, like, orchards and such that there's a lot of stuff you can just sit here and just e-break into all of it and get constant points multiplier bonuses to your little skill train that leads to getting easy skill bonuses and such, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
The racing itself is pretty much the same. A lot of trying to win these races. This time around, you're running the festival, the boss, also being the sort of like head PR guy, I guess. So by racing, you earn fans, and then that allows you to expand the festival with new sites.
I see. I think they missed the trick there, because they could have turned it into a full-on management mode in there. And I actually would have preferred that.
Yeah, maybe.
Interesting.
Man, so like you get as you sort of rank up on the fan side, you get the ability to upgrade certain of the festival sites, or eventually you'll get the ability to set up whole new ones, which you get to pick from them. It's like the first time around, it's like, oh, pick this, like the Outback or the beachside one, and when you pick one, it tells you who on your friends list picked that. It's like, you and 30% of gamers picked this one. It's like, Okay, that's a weird thing to for a racing game to tell you. It's not like this is The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
It actually matters.
Yeah, because it's not like it's like one shot and you can pick the next one next time around.
Yeah. One of the other cool things they do is the stuff called blueprints. For each of the races, you can sort of create like a version of that race. Different, you can limit it to like certain classes of cars, different weather settings, change the lap number, things like that. Nothing about the actual race itself, but more so the settings for it. And then that becomes available alongside that. So when anybody on your friends list goes to play that particular race, they'll see, oh, here's Chris's blueprint or Phil's blueprint. I tried to use emojis as the name for one of them that I made.
Yeah.
It just turns into blocks.
Oh.
I was like, man, this could have been feeding right into your PR manager thing. Just have like, I try to set up like a muscle car race. So it's like, okay, here's the muscle emoji, and then here's the car, and here's the flag, and a trophy.
And then,
that's perfect. Nope, blocks.
Yeah. They might have done that, though, to avoid like the constant string of poop emojis.
I don't think there's a poop emoji on Xbox One.
Hmm.
Oh. I was looking through them all. I couldn't find anything. I couldn't find any even like kangaroos or anything weird like that.
Hmm.
It's like, you got a game centered around Australia. Why don't you have any kangaroo
emojis. Yeah.
Or koala bear or something like that?
Hmm. Does it still make full use of Drivatars?
Yep, they're asshole simulators right there.
Well, no, one of the things that I really liked about Horizon 2 in particular was that it basically took Drivatars from your entire friend list and made it feel like you were just on this road trip with your friends.
Yeah.
Even if none of them were online. And
yeah, you can definitely honk at them and create a convoy to come around, riding around with you.
Mm.
So you can feel like you got friends even when you don't have any online with you.
It's such a simple inclusion, but it was so awesome last time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is, it's like, they'll appear in your game even if they've never actually played the game.
Yeah, that's the weird part. Yep.
They just have to have Drivatar data on their, you know, registered from some Forza game.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they start throwing that stuff in there early on, like after I did the first initial, like, get to the festival site beginning thing. And it's like, okay, go beat Danny O'Dwyer. Like, what? That's your first thing. It's like you're recruiting people for your Drivatar team.
Hmm.
Almost like your street PR team kind of thing.
Yeah.
I was tweeting at him. He's like freaking out about it. I was like, oh, man. That's I was telling him he was sucking, though. He was racing like get 9th and 10th out of these like 12 races. Like, man, I'm gonna have to drop you soon. I think I started up this morning and I just found his Drivatar just driving into a wall late at night. I was like, I'm not gonna judge you, but there's something weird going on here. And he was driving in a pickup truck at the beginning as well. It's like, you gotta get a better ride than that. So I was driving a weird like modern version of a Pinto that looked real crappy. I didn't realize I had the back there, but I don't think they let you spin the car models around when you're like, which car do you want to buy? So I didn't realize it was like this weird looking car that has like a truck bed in the back.
Yeah.
But yeah, they got a lot better cars now. You can get them through like the, every time you level up, you can do like the spinning the wheel thing, earn that or credits. I get mostly credits. You can buy new cars, all that sort of stuff. Occasional times I'll start up like a blueprint race and it's like, oh, you don't have any of the cars that could fit this. Let's go have you buy one.
Hmm.
And I have so many, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I'll buy it, whatever. And they immediately when you go to buy it, it'll load up the liveries that people have made. Hmm. So you can go and apply them right there.
Yeah.
So there's no like financial aspect to the liveries. I think just if you get more likes on them or more people downloading them, I think you get bonuses, but other than that, it's sort of the limit of the marketplace for that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you can just sell, like, duplicate cars from the spinning, the wheel spins. What else is there? So, like, the convoy stuff you can do is pretty cool. You just sort of honk at them. And they have, like, a weird way of unlocking horns. It's like one of the microtransactions, the horn accelerator.
Okay.
Like, unlocking your ability to get more horns more quickly.
Yeah.
But they don't even, like, push that stuff to the front.
Yeah.
Or saying, oh, you've unlocked a new horn. They don't say that at all.
Hmm.
But I initially had the Warhog from Halo.
Hmm.
If you played any Halo game, they sent you a message saying, hey, here's a code. You can get the Warhog in Forza Horizon 3. So I had that, and I had, like, a bike horn attached to it. It was like you're driving the horn. Like, okay, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Now I unlocked the part where you could take pictures of cars, and you get, like, 1,000 credits for each new car.
Hmm.
So you're trying to take pictures of all the cars on the island. It's, like, 420.
Yeah. Ooh. So they actually made, you know, photo mode actually useful for something.
Yeah, but it's just weird because you enable it, and it stops everything. And you go and take pictures of cars, and it takes longer because it's just trying to process the image, but I don't really care about the image.
Yeah, you just want like, the cash.
And it's like, no car selected. Damn it. I had to wait for it to finish, and I back out a couple times, and I eventually go try again.
Mm.
It involves me just like driving down the highway at 130 miles an hour, holding the up button, stopping it, then realizing when I get back, oh, crap, I'm going way too fast. It's like just doing it the worst times because I'm being stupid. Mm. But yeah, that game's pretty good. If you're tired of the Forza Horizon formula, it's probably not going to change your mind. But if you can get it on the cheap or whatever, it's still a pretty good time.
Mm.
And I've also been playing...
I had a feeling it would be.
Yeah. Yeah, it's doesn't... capture the same amount of spirit that Burnout Paradise did for me.
Hmm.
That game just felt like it had an attitude and a style to it that this game doesn't even come close to.
Yeah.
This game just feels like the corporate version of Burnout Paradise. It's a clean, squeaky clean sort of thing.
Yeah.
See, and that's one of the things I like about it is that, like, just not bothering with any of the attitude and getting down to just the racing aspect. It always feels so forced to me.
Yeah, but the attitude they do have here is sort of like a modern millennial PR squeaky clean thing.
Yeah.
It just kind of feels like there's not much of anything there at all. Just go drive the cars.
Yeah.
Ignore that you've got this Australian woman. Where are we going to put all these fans? We're going to build new festivals.
Yep.
Shut up for a while. Everybody's got to do their narration. I want to tell them to shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Just screw you. I want to go keep racing. Yeah, and I've also been playing more Destiny Rise of Iron. Definitely get better loots. Get into some good points in the story, which is about this new threat called Siva. S-I-V-A, which sounds like a...
Smashing Pumpkin song.
Or an erectile dysfunction drug. And it's this weird, like, insect force that used to plague the universe long ago with the sort of titular Iron Lords that used to run things, or used to help defend the humans. And... they've infected the Fallen, I think it is, one of the main factions of enemies.
Hmm.
And so they're like these more powered up versions of them. And I am traveling across the galaxy fighting these new settlements of these things as they're trying to figure out what they can do with their newfound powers. And we're trying to stop them, obviously. The new social space is pretty cool. It's kind of same as the others as far as just here's the guy you go to identify your unidentified loot. Here's your message person. Here's your marketplace person. All that sort of stuff.
Hmm.
I'm still trying to get to the point where I can just go on to the main patrol in the new sort of combat hub area where you can get specific bounties for that part of the whole thing, which I'm looking forward to getting more of that. But yeah, still shooting dudes. I got a new exotic scout rifle, which is a nice sort of more functional sniper rifle kind of thing where you can zoom in real nice and get headshots pretty easy, but not be as sort of slow and encumbered as you typically are with sniper rifles in games.
Yeah.
But yeah, still looking forward to playing more of that. And the other game I've been playing is Darkest Dungeon on the PS4 and Vita. Mostly the Vita. Shut up, Cortana. Cortana just popped up on my PC for whatever reason. So yeah, Darkest Dungeon. I'm mostly playing on Vita. And this game is that part of XCOM where your guys are just freaking out and doing stupid things over and over again.
Yeah.
That's just all this game is. That's just that where your guys are freaking out.
Yeah, they all develop neuroses and just.
It's like, no, things. I'm not gonna take your healing potion, you witch. This one, or no, I'm not gonna fight this time. I'm just gonna pass. Like, but I need you to, damn you. And then they so they have like a stress meter that fills up as weird stuff happens. When it fills up, they develop some new neurosis or whatever it is. And then it gets the ability to fill up a second time. And if that goes, they can potentially get like a really cool buff or something like that. Or they can have a heart attack and die. And when they get to that point where they develop the neurosis, you kind of want to let them take a break. Yeah. You can drop them off at the tavern or the church. Say, here, just go drink for the week.
Just go get drunk. Be fine.
There's therapy for you.
You can sleep with some prostitutes or go pray at the church, things like that. That also costs money. And it also leaves you having to fend for yourself with some of the new recruits that you can pull in. And the game doesn't really do a great job of guiding you along early on. It'll do all the tutorial stuff explaining what things are, but they don't really tell you like good early strategies. So my first dungeon attempt, I ended up buying a couple of everything that they had, not really knowing that the money would dry up real quick if I didn't do real well in the dungeons.
Yeah.
So eventually I got to a point where everybody is freaked out. Stress meter is full up at least the first time. I have barely any money to buy any supplies. And I'm just ready to say, well, fuck all of you. I'm going to start over again. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Just going to try again with a new fresh save.
Yeah.
See how that goes. But, yeah, it's really good. It's just that point where you reach everybody's just freaking out and you're like, god damn it. because I figured out how to call forth the Cthulhu monster. Because you apparently use a, I was like, oh, I can put a torch on this. I wonder what this does. It just calls this freaking Cthulhu monster that just kills your stress levels, just raises them real fast. Well, that was a real good use of my time. And somehow I ended up, I didn't know if he stayed there, if I had to use another torch to summon him. No, he just stays there. So I had to try and go around the other way in the dungeon. So it's like two times I've faced off against this guy. I'm trying to run away from him, get around him, like circle around the dungeons.
Hmm.
It ends up just killing my whole save, basically, but it was going downhill anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You know, if you end up at the point where you summon Cthulhu, you can just pretty much start over. It's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Things have gone south when Cthulhu shows up.
Why is this in this dungeon in the first place?
Especially in the first damn dungeon.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's been my week. So how about you, Lee?
Been playing a little bit of Legion. I got a newer Xbox. I got an Xbox One, and so I've been playing reinstall everything.
Oh yeah.
Which is great on Xbox.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I mean, it doesn't bother me. Like, I mean, I had a bunch of stuff on a separate drive, so it's not that bad. But it is kind of crazy when I'm sitting here like, holy shit, how much more do I have to install? And just, you know, kind of doing that over and over. But now, honestly, the big thing that I've been doing is I've been playing lately actually has been Fallout New Vegas. And I've had the game for years.
Yeah.
I have never – I've played the hell out of Fallout 3. I played the hell out of Oblivion. And just kind of like I had to be in a set – in a particular mindset to really get into an open world game where it's more about, you know, going through the world and being immersed in it rather than – it having specific goals in mind. So, but you know, I've been doing that, and I did end up modding a chunk of it, just doing some textures and things like that, and just really kind of prettying up the game because it's ugly as fuck otherwise, and it is janky as fuck otherwise. So, yeah, I've been having a blast with it. Like, it feels, and I know why this is. But it feels much more Fallout-y, I guess is the best way I can explain it, compared to 3. And that's, of course, because the old Obsidian guys did it. And so there's a lot more choices in terms of how you can actually accomplish your goals. And it's really kind of refreshing to have that be the case rather than, okay, what are the 30 different ways I can shoot my way out of this, you know? So that has been, it's been thoroughly enjoyable. And I especially appreciate the fact that you can be like, the choices aren't binary. It's not like, well, you're either a good guy or you're a bad guy. There's all of these different factions. All of them are sort of, you know, in that gray area. And so it's not just, you know, let me be either the good guy and like, you know, like you would with Mass Effect and choose the Paragon option, or let me choose the dickhead option and slap somebody in the face. I mean, there's multiple things you could do. Like, I just negotiated release of the troops, and then if I wanted to, then I could turn around and blow the guy's heads off that released the troops that I just negotiated for, just to do it. Yeah. And then there are consequences for that. Like, and so it really kind of rewards, you know, how you play. So I've been thoroughly enjoying that. Modding it was interesting because, you know, you do things in a certain order. If you do them wrong, if you have your load order wrong or anything else like that, the game doesn't work, which is kind of funny because the games have broken any damn way. There's like 4 unofficial patches for it by the modding community just to make it work properly. So, those have been the big ones. And I've really enjoyed, I think Fallout has probably been the biggest surprise for me because, again, it's been so long since I've gotten into an open world game. And actually just enjoyed it. A lot of times, I feel like a lot of the games that are out today are really kind of more about go here, check this box, go here, check this box, go here, do 3 of these things to check this box. And, you know, that just doesn't – I'm not interested in that anymore. So just the ability to kind of wander into stuff in this game and just see, you know, random funny shit happen or, you know, really just weird stuff is very enjoyable. It's been a fun change of pace. So yeah, I got Forza Horizon as well. I haven't played it, but I'll get there eventually.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, other than that, like I said, the big thing is the installing stuff on the Xbox, which it's actually installing right now. Man, the S is a lot smaller than I expected it to be.
Yeah, it's not much bigger than a 360.
No, it's not. I gotta say, I'm not too happy with the white. I really would have preferred black.
Yeah.
And I like white consoles, actually. I think white electronics in general actually look pretty neat.
I just don't like this one.
It's just weird on the Xbox.
Exactly. Well, not even that. I mean, I thought the original Xbox in white looked pretty damn good. Or not the original Xbox. The original Xbox 360 in white looked good. And I think that actually the OG Xbox One looks pretty decent in white. But I don't know what it is about this console. I saw I saw the gray one that they have that's coming out for Battlefield, and it just looks so much better. I think it's the holes in it, like the grill design. But it's still a good looking console. I definitely would have preferred black. So, which is ironic because I have a white PS4, I have the crystal white PS3, but it just, there's something about it that rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, but it's nice, it's quiet, and, like I said, I'm just reinstalling everything, which, I don't know, you know what's funny, because I know this is actually going to lead into our first topic, where we're going to talk about BC for Xbox. Like, I don't know what it is with me, like, just how I'm playing or like what my attitude is with, as far as gaming has been recently, but backwards compatibility has always mattered to me a great deal. And I gotta say, like, as somebody who's pretty much been playing the PS4 the majority of this generation as far as terms of my next gen output, I really appreciate Microsoft and what they're doing with backwards compatibility. Nobody else is doing it. Sony doesn't seem to give a shit. So to our first story, Lost Odyssey is now BC. Like, I am enjoying that. I don't know what that says about the current generation, if I just don't like the newer games. But, like, every time a BC title gets announced, I'm like, yes. Fuck yeah. I get to play this old shit on this new thing.
Yeah, I definitely like how Microsoft has been doing it because, they seem to be actually very serious about actually getting as many of their old 360 titles on the Xbox One as possible. They keep rolling new titles, old titles, out every week. I'm signed up with True Achievements, and one of the things they do is when a new backwards compatibility title comes out that you own, they send you a notification saying, yo, your stuff is playable now.
So how does that work? How do they know which games you own?
Just by your trophies.
By your achievements.
I'm totally signing up for that, like, right after we get done.
Yeah. You got this achievement 6 years ago. You still have the game?
they don't know if you actually still have the game, but...
Well, what's funny about that for me is I don't trade games in. It's a losing... it's a monetary... It's a losing strategy to trade your stuff in for the most part. Unless it's something that you just absolutely hate, I would rather sell it on Craigslist or something like that. I keep everything pretty much,
The nice thing about the Lost Odyssey BC is it's basically just one download. You don't have to put all four discs in.
Yeah, and I haven't done that yet. Is the way that they know you have Lost Odyssey is you just keep the first disc in there?
Yeah.
Because there is no digital download for it.
Nope.
I hope they get that taken care of. Because I remember reading a long time ago a big reason why multi-disc games weren't on digital download is there's some issue with them actually being multi-disc.
Yeah. Yeah, on the Xbox 360, I don't know if they were able to sort that out, but on the Xbox One, they managed it.
That's got to be a huge download, though.
Yeah, it's like 22 gigs, I think.
Yeah, it's like 20-some gigs.
Which, you know, half the size of a normal Xbox One game, so.
Yeah, well worth it, I think.
Which one is it that's the four-disc game? Is that Blue Dragon?
Blue Dragon is 3, Lost Odyssey is 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
Those are like some PS1-ass games right there. Just
yeah, except three or each four of them discs. Is like 8 gigs each. Each disc is like 8 gigs.
Because I remember they had like a special case for it, and it's like, this thing looks like a CDR thing stacked.
Some bootleg stuff is...
I appreciate it, though, man. I mean, they seem like they're the only ones that care. Sony really doesn't.
No, when you're number one, you don't really have to care.
Well, you know, and that's sort of the thing. Like, and we've talked about it here before, of course, is that, you know, I question whether or not they'd probably be so hardcore about this if they were number one, which, you know, this kind of makes me happy that they're not. Mm. But I think part of it, too, is at least for me, I feel like last generation, number one, because of how long it went on, but number two, at the tail end of it, I felt like we got some really – more unique games that probably haven't been given a chance. So I'm hoping a lot of this stuff with the BC, like some more obscure titles will make it on there. Like one of the ones that I would love to see pop up that I felt was a really underrated game was The Saboteur, you know, and there's just, for me especially, I think because there's so much I still haven't played from last generation, the BC is awesome. I love having it on a newer console. I love the fact that – and I have my 360 sitting still in my entertainment center. But one of the things that I worry about is all these moving parts. Even if I have the stuff installed and all that, you know, I know one day my 360 is going to break down. But the fact that I can play this stuff on the Xbox One, I know the disc doesn't even friggin' move, you know, and then I have it on an external hard drive. It's one of those things where I'm like, okay, well, this will be something I'll be able to play, you know, far in the future whenever I actually find the time to actually play the games that I own.
And along those same lines, well, some more games that you could probably not play for a while. October's PlayStation Plus and Games with Gold were just announced. Games with Gold, interesting selection this month.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it.
Yeah, well, you got Super Mega Baseball Extra Innings, which is an absolute must-play.
Yeah, they just announced the sequel.
Yeah, so yeah.
Are you serious?
I am totally serious. That game is amazing.
Yeah, is it really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It very much reminds me of like Super Baseball Simulator.
Yeah. Ooh,
yeah. Super Nintendo.
Yeah, you got like baseballs that are on fire. And, yeah, it's awesome.
Okay, I'm sold. Yeah. All right. Yeah, because I was looking at it. I was looking at the games for gold just because I'm installing games on the Xbox right now while the podcast is going on.
Yeah.
And I was like, this picture looks terrible. I wonder if this game is terrible. It looks like it might be terrible, and like for the PlayStation, and like, and then I did the same thing for Games with Gold on Microsoft. I'm like, well, these look pretty terrible too. And so here I am judging games I'll probably never play based on their covers.
Yeah,
so, real slickly. Yeah.
So along with Super Mega Baseball, you got The Escapist, which was pretty good.
It's a wiki game if I ever played one.
Yeah. Design a prison. Okay. Seems pretty cool.
Well, you don't design a prison. You are one of the prisoners trying to escape.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. So you're crafting
a prison architect.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're like beating people up, stealing stuff off of them, and trying to craft your way out of prison.
Yeah.
I have a huge issue just with the idea of prison architect. That's a different story entirely. Like, I don't, like, it's like, oh, look at that. I'm trying to figure out how to, like, actually, like, monetize misery. This is wonderful. That sounds like that would be such a fantastic game.
It's really topical.
Yeah.
Jesus.
So.
It's kind of like SimCity, but instead of just giving you bad reviews as mayor, they shank and kill each other.
Yeah. I mean, wow. Fuck it.
And the two 360 games are MX vs. ATV Reflex, which probably don't care about, and I Am Alive, which I don't really know if I should care about. But
yeah, it's free, a cool game. Download it. I Am Alive is a cool game. It's just cool.
Yeah.
It's just not really much more than that.
It's just okay.
It's like, hey, you get to explore this like post-apocalypse version of like New York or something like that.
Yeah.
And the idea of holding up people without even having bullets in your guns, just by the fact that they don't actually know it, but if you try and shoot it, then they know that you're not, they have nothing in the barrel, and sort of can adjust accordingly. It's like a really cool thing that leads to things like DayZ and all these other games that do it much better.
Yeah. So that's the Xbox One. PS4 is pretty interesting this month. Resident Evil on PS4 is one of your games with PlayStation Plus.
Remake.
Yeah, remake.
Remake HD.
Yeah. I don't know if the Master of Unlocking makes an appearance in this one, or if they actually relocalized it. Don't know. Transformers Devastation, which you should play.
Yes, you absolutely should. That is a great game, especially for free.
Yeah. On PS3, you get Mad Riders and From Dust.
From Dust is cool. It's sort of like I'm Alive, where it's the concept and some of the basic stuff is cool. It doesn't necessarily go the whole way.
Yeah. And then you got two Vita titles. Code Realize, Guardian of Rebirth.
That is the most Vita title I've ever seen.
The only thing it's missing is panties.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's another Otome game.
Yeah. And finally, for rounding it out for the Vita, is actual sunlight. Mm. So I'm guessing what, that just turns the screen white?
It's a visual novel game about...
going outside?
A man who is overweight and really depressed.
Oh, great.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Game you want to take with you everywhere.
Yeah.
Spread the depression around.
Yeah. So that's your six PlayStation Plus titles for the month.
I had no idea that Mad Riders was a Techland game.
Yeah.
I wonder when they're going to drop the Vita.
Well, it's not really costing them anything to just keep the thing going. So.
No, I know. But I wonder at this point, like, what else are they really going to start putting on it?
Yeah, it's all indie and visual novels, it looks like we're getting for the most part these days.
Well, as long as NIS and Falcom are around, I think it'll be pretty well fed.
Yeah. And they're spreading the depression with Darkest Dungeon.
Yeah.
No, I meant specifically for the PlayStation Plus stuff. I mean,
yeah.
They're going to pull... They gotta pull games out of their ass every month, so.
Yeah, well, I guess when it dries up, maybe they'll drop it and maybe add another slot to PS3 or PS4, but for the most part. It's also kind of, if you notice, the organization of titles is actually a little bit different this month.
Hmm.
Yeah, you got two PS4s, two PS3s, and two Vitas. This is actually, I think, the first month where we don't actually have any cross-buy titles.
It's true.
I want to say there probably has been, but I don't know.
Yeah. I wonder if that will be a trend.
That's probably just a coincidence.
Yeah, probably.
And interesting to note, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's your free games for the month of October.
Got to segregate your free games for you.
Yep.
Keep them from touching each other.
Yep. It's a very racist joke, but I'm not going to.
You beat the people with your feelings over here.
Yeah. So we'll get into the first topic. Is more details on the Famicom and NES minis have been showing up.
Yes.
Japan is getting it good.
Yeah. There's one on there that I can completely understand why it didn't make its way to the North American one, and the other one needs an explanation.
Yeah, Final Fantasy III. Well, yeah, we didn't get that over here anyway.
Never got localized on the NES. They probably have no interest in localizing it on the NES at this point.
Yeah,
and it's probably a wash.
Yeah,
the first time that was ever playable on a console here was the Ouya.
Yeah. And that was because it was Android.
Yep.
And then there was, it's River City Ransom, which, why is that not on there? Since there is, in fact, an English localization of it, albeit it's kind of bad, but it's still English.
Yep.
Maybe, school kids beating the crap out of each other is probably not something Nintendo wants to foster these days? I don't know.
There have been two remakes in recent years.
Yeah.
I think one just came out last month.
Hmm. It's also possible that maybe it's one of those games that are hidden and you can't access quite yet. So
I just wonder how rare this thing's going to be.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to sell out immediately. I'm pretty sure of that.
Yeah.
There were some details as to like how the thing's going to work. That came out as well.
Yeah, some of it. I read some. Bob Mackey was talking about that. And some of it just seems really like questionable. Like the cords are stupid short, which is weird. Like that makes sense. Like when we were kids and you did sit 3 feet from the TV because the TV was like 20 inches or smaller because tube TVs were expensive. But like. That doesn't make sense now. Like I sit like 8 feet from my TV, and I'm not gonna. And I have a 55-inch, so I'm not gonna be like sitting in front of it with a 3 foot short cable.
Yeah.
So hopefully they'll figure that out. The other thing too is that so there's no home button or anything else like that. So you need to reset the console when you want to change games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I mean, I guess there's realism there, right? But that was one of those things that kind of was just like, I could overlook that part. Like, we just got to get hit reset because that's what we did. You know, if they made us hold the power button and the reset button together to save something, that'd be even more hilarious. But the controllers being so short, I just don't get that.
Yeah.
I think that's because that's probably how long the, like, Nunchuk and Classic Controller Pro cables were to attach to the Wii Remote. That's what this is, essentially, one of those type of controllers.
Yeah, but they don't have to be that short. That's the really irritating part about it.
It seems like this thing's supposed to be like something you travel with, so you probably not going to be hiding it in your cabinet.
Yeah.
You should probably have it out somewhere more accessible.
It's going to need a long-ass HDMI cable to get it to your coffee table. You have it sit on there.
Yeah, the article I linked here said the HDMI cable is pretty long. Doesn't say how long, though.
So that's probably...
It does say the device itself is about 1/8 the size of the NES, which is pretty damn small.
Yeah.
And it doesn't... You don't actually have to blow into it, though, which would have been cool if you had to, like, flip over and flip the thing up and then just blow into it, and there was a microphone in there that would detect that, but... Yeah.
Yeah, this thing says it actually has a pretty good, like, demo mode. If you just leave it sitting on the home menu... demos will start up, Mario will just run around and hit stuff, and then start up games to go to their, like, a track screen.
Yeah.
It's like some weird little thing, like, you might just leave it on in, like, a nerdy party, something like that. I guess the games actually look better than they do on the Wii U.
Yeah, but that's not saying much, because the Wii U virtual console was bad.
Yeah, it's supposed to be, like, brighter and sharper.
Yeah.
And I guess... There's supposed to be 4 restore points for each game.
Yeah.
So you're able to do more than the Wii U. So this essentially says it's not running on Wii U hardware.
No.
Or running the Wii U OS. So that's...
Yeah, that's like a very dedicated thing.
This has 3 display modes, sort of a CRT filter. If you want to make your games look, I guess, like the... Might have been in the old times.
Or try to.
And there's 4x3 modes, the default... And a pixel perfect mode, which actually makes all the pixels squares instead of more rectangular like the original hardware.
Yeah.
So it looks like it should.
Well, not actually looks like it should.
As close as it should.
It looks like it would have directly coming out of the NES.
Yeah.
But back then you were playing it on a 4:3 TV, so the pixels got stretched anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Still, yeah, no, like widescreen stretch option, which is good.
No, good. Don't want that.
Nope. I don't like it when I go to my parents and see them watching, like, the basketball game, and it's all zoomed in because they didn't want to see the... the size. They're watching the 4x3 version on widescreen TV and just stretching it. Like, that's... You got an HD version of this feed. You should use that.
Yeah. So...
No manuals. It just displays the URL. Tells you go find it on your computer or your phone. It also gives you a QR code, I guess, that you can scan that.
To take you there, yeah.
Yeah. That's just weird.
Yeah, but I can kind of see why they did it, because you want to keep that cost down.
Yeah. She's like, here's a URL, go figure it out.
Yeah, if you want it, you print it yourself. So, yeah.
That's how we did it before.
Yeah.
Print out, like, FAQs on the printer. It's like, gotta wait 30 minutes for this to print out.
What the hell are my neighbors doing? Anyways, and speaking of more old games, SNK is promising to step up their presence on the PS4.
Yep.
Put a bunch of stuff on the Arcade Archives line.
Yeah.
The hamster.
Yeah. Fatal Fury, Samurai Showdown, and King of Fighters 94. That's interesting, because the stuff that they've committed to the PS4 thus far has been from the newer end of the Neo Geo lifespan.
Yeah, not going back.
And these are pretty much the exact opposite, so... it'll be good, though. It'll be a chance to see really the beginnings of some of their marquee franchises.
Yeah.
Not sure exactly how KOF 94 is going to digest for people at this point. But
after 14, then going back to 94, it's like, whoa, wait, you mean you can't actually choose the members of your team? Oh.
Yeah. Now, if they'd done KOF 94 Rebout, that would have been interesting.
Yeah.
Rebout was really good.
And it'll be interesting to see if this gets the sort of archive treatment where they have multiple modes of the game.
Hmm.
Sort of different versions. I know, like, you could essentially get, like, Gradius 2, I think it was. There's, like, two different versions of that. I was watching Giant Bomb play a bunch of this stuff, the more recent stuff, and it's like, there's two different modes. There's, like, a caravan mode just says, try and see what you can do in 5 minutes. Things like that, which is pretty cool. Especially if you get the right games for it.
Yeah.
And this might also be shedding light on why the PS3's Neo Geo Station line got pulled.
Hmm. Did they actually, like, remove them from the store, or they just stopped doing them?
They've removed them. Hmm. Like, they are delisted.
Hmm.
I don't think they're completely deep six like PT, but I think if you bought them, you can still download them.
Yeah.
But if you haven't bought them yet, you're SOL.
Hmm. Yeah, until they show up on PS4.
Yep.
Then maybe they'll be able to buy them then.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You got this next one here, Pat?
Yeah, just an interesting thing from the Shmuplations blog. They've unearthed some Japanese interviews with Capcom staff in the weeks and months leading up to the arcade release of Street Fighter III Third Strike, and it makes a really interesting read for fans of the game, or really just fans of fighting games in general. So I just wanted to put a link there and point that out because I thought it was pretty interesting. And it's kind of surprising to just see how little Neo G interviews have changed in nearly two decades.
Yeah. Guys, you know, he likes what he does, and he does it the same way. So.
Yep.
Good stuff there.
But it's a really good read, and actually shed some light on things about Third Strike that, as far as I'm aware, aren't really common knowledge.
Yeah.
So give that a read if you should feel so inclined.
Yeah. It's pretty lengthy there. You got a lot to digest. So set aside maybe about half an hour so you can.
Yeah. You'll be entertained. Proper.
Yeah. And, okay. So a story that we've followed on the Day Zero update was Mike Watson. And his trials and tribulations with the city for the continued existence of the Super Arcade.
Yeah, and it wasn't looking good there for quite a while. But now it appears, based on a Twitter post, that he has won the battle and has all the necessary applications and permits in place to to get things moving again.
Hmm. So, which is good, because, we need places like that.
And just the way the whole thing played out, it seemed like there was a lot of really scummy stuff going on the city's side, a lot of cronyism. I think, Lee, wasn't there something about, like, a city-backed competitor?
Yeah, that was the thing that popped up the last I'd heard of it. And I'm just super happy to see that this has worked out for Mike, because, you know, this is, as we're finding ourselves move more and more towards, you know, everything being digital and everybody sort of being in their houses to play games, I feel like there really is an important role to play for arcades, you know, kind of in the future of competitive gaming. Even if it is just, you know, a place where you go once a week or once a month or something like that, you know, there still should be stuff like that around. Yeah. And you know, it makes a lot of sense to have one of the people that has been involved in this scene really since its inception to be one of the people doing it. So, yeah, I mean, there's I haven't read up on a lot of the newer stuff that happened, and I'm actually going to reach out to Mike and holler at him about this stuff. But I'm so glad he's able to move forward to it because he sank so much money into this, and you know, it's just one of those things like where you think about like how bad part of this must have been for him to go through it and to hit every roadblock possible, but still be able to make it work. I think is great.
Yeah. Looks like he just sank a lot more too, because the permits weren't cheap. So his total is $1,597.50.
Ouch.
Yeah, but you know, the other thing too is that Cali is also one of the places where something like this could still exist. Like you wouldn't get away with this in Georgia. You know, no. You wouldn't get away with it. I mean, hell, I think you can argue at this point you can't get away with it in New York with all the arcades there that have closed down, and of course the rent being insane.
Isn't Next Level still doing well?
I think Next Level is, but I think it's about it.
Yeah, which is a shame. All right, so I guess we'll move on to Harada, who's been talking lately.
Yeah, he's answered some questions recently about what's in the pipeline for Tekken with Tekken 7's release on the horizon about 6 months from now, I think. He says he intends for 2017 to be the year of Tekken, and they're going to be doing this whole esports integration world tour to support the game, which sounds an awful lot like Capcom Cup and the King of Fighters World Championships that have been announced. So, our scene's growing.
Yeah,
it's all there. What can be said is, and the more that the developers and publishers get on board, I mean, the faster it's going to happen.
Yeah, you know, I'm just interested to see like how Tekken 7 itself turns out, whether or not it's going to come out as a bare bones skeleton of a game. I kind of doubt it. Harada's not really known for that. Yeah. In fact, you know, he's often been criticized for including too much.
So. Yeah, if anything, the kind of growing pains that Street Fighter V has experienced are what Harada has traditionally left in the arcade. Like, if you looked at Tekken 7 has been a thing in the arcades for a long time now, probably over a year at this point. And they're in their second iteration now, Faded Retribution, which is going to be released on console just as Tekken 7. But it started out as kind of a bare-bones thing, and then you had your time-release characters, and then your update patches, and then Faded Retribution dropped, and Akuma was added, and, you know, it's an ongoing work, but it's going to be far more complete when it finally sees a console release.
Yeah. Well, when you know, something like that in the arcade actually would make a lot more sense, given you know, you're going there, you're putting some money in, you don't expect to be playing for several hours at a time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, when you're at home, you kind of want something to give you some lasting value.
Yep. And, yeah, this is going to be interesting. This is the trajectory that Tekken has used for years, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if anything, the console release will be kind of the culmination of Tekken 7's evolution.
Yeah. As long as it has a nice, robust ghost battle mode, I'm happy.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
I just want to see. I want to hear more about this whole year of Tekken that's planned, because I love me some Tekken, and I've kind of been out of it since Tekken 6 came out. But yeah. I wasn't a big fan of Tekken 6. I wasn't a big fan of Tag Tournament 2. But Tekken 7, from everything I've seen, seems to be like a return to form, a return to everything that just made the Tekken 5 run so fun.
Yeah. There's something to be said about, you know, simplifying but not, you know, dumbing down.
Yeah. And I think what really turned me off of Tekken 6 and Tag Tournament 2 was that there was just so much emphasis on, I can understand knowing your frames and having your punishes down and everything, but it seemed like all a lot of players were doing was counting frames whenever they were playing. And Tekken at its best is so much, so much more than that, so much more multifaceted, that I just didn't like the whole concept of the back and forth, not really accounting for positioning so much as just, hey, he blocked this, he whiffed on this, answer with this, and so on. It felt like it took too many key components of the game out. Mm. And considering, especially how I play Tekken 5 and how I had a lot of success playing Tekken 5, it just really didn't feel right. Mm. So, and, you know, maybe there's more to it than that, but just the way I've always seen those games presented, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's, you know, if you look at Tekken Tag 2, which basically their campaign mode was just a set of trial challenges.
Yeah.
You know? When you're at that point, I think something's gone wrong along the way.
Yeah. Well, I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking straight up versus play. It just...
Yeah, but that's a symptom. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Kind of. Hmm. But hopefully we see the return of mobility.
Yeah, that would be nice. actually moving in a fighting game. That'd be the concept. Of...
Yeah, it just felt like Tekken 6 was... And Tag Tournament 2 by association were kind of forcing everyone to stand on each other's toes the entire match.
Hmm. And it became more like Rock'em Sock'em Robots. And
yeah. But, you know, they seem to have fixed it. Hmm. I am thoroughly enjoying the match videos I've seen so far. Hmm. I absolutely want to see more of it.
Yeah. Well, I've only got a few months left. I think it's March.
I don't know if they've committed to anything yet, but it should be right around there, yeah.
Yeah. Also on PC, which is unusual for a Tekken game. Yeah.
That's a first for Tekken.
Yeah. And PC and modding. That's going to be interesting. Yeah.
Well, now that you got SF5 on there, you can mod them into Tekken and vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure somebody's going to transplant characters around there. Yeah. So we got some Destiny 2 rumors, among one of them being a PC version apparently coming out. The fact that we're actually talking about Destiny 2 is kind of strange, because I thought Destiny was just going to be an ongoing thing and there wouldn't actually be a Destiny 2.
At least not for a really long time.
Hmm. Well, the problem is the way we've learned about the tools that Bungie's been using is that their current tools are really terrible. Essentially, from what I recall reading, is that things like just opening up their environments to an editor takes hours.
Okay.
To be able to make changes. Like, things like that is very much, for anybody that's been playing the expansions, has been able to see that they haven't really made too many changes to the existing areas.
Hmm.
Even when they have their like little themed like holiday stuff,
yeah,
it's limited to like the social areas.
Yeah,
and it makes a lot of sense why they don't make too many big changes. And it's stuff like that that probably has them wanting to move to a new tool set as fast as they can, hmm. And essentially, the rumors, along with the PC version for Destiny 2, is that they're going to be making some big overhauls to the way the game works and all that.
Yeah.
They just recently ditched the last-gen consoles with the new expansion, which has allowed them to sort of push the graphics a bit more. Not necessarily have to think about how everything's going to look on the PS3 or Xbox 360. So just being able to start fresh on a new sequel with the current gen in mind is going to be huge for that game. Because it already looks really good. But being able to just throw that old crap away will be nice for them. And they're also talking about things like leaving the old planets, characters, and such behind. Sort of rethinking things. This sort of compares it to Diablo 2 in comparison to Diablo 1, which did some really good stuff to iterate on what the original did, but obviously didn't bring over, let you import anything from the original game.
Yeah.
I could see them definitely allowing you to transfer your character over and just basically pulling base information over. And being able to maybe reward you with some new stuff based on what you did in the original.
Yeah.
Which is sort of what they've been doing going into these last couple big expansions, sort of saying, hey, you know, beat the raid, accomplish these like special achievements, and we'll give you some bonuses when you go to the new thing. I could see them doing that for Destiny 2. I believe Luke Smith is supposed to be heading up the team for Destiny 2. After they did reorganization earlier this year. I guess what they were working on with Destiny 2 wasn't cutting it, and that's why we have Rise of Iron. Because that was originally supposed to be out this fall.
Yeah.
And they said, well, we got to get something out for now, and we're going to put this new, well, not new, but Luke Smith's been there for a while, but he headed up Taken King, which was a big, huge expansion that reinvigorated everything there for the original game, sort of kind of fixed a lot of the weird stuff about that game, but obviously couldn't fix everything if they're, you know, working with busted tools.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's promising stuff. This will be, like, the first PC game Bungie has worked on in probably a while. They've been mostly console for a long time.
I think since Halo 2 on Windows Vista.
Maybe. Or was that Gearbox?
Hmm.
Or did Gearbox do the first game? I forget. No, Gearbox was involved with Halo at some point on PC. I don't know.
I know it only ran on Windows Vista, which was really irritating.
Yeah.
And then eventually Windows 7. But now you can't play it because Games for Windows Live doesn't exist.
Yeah.
You have a Halo Anniversary Collection and Master Chief Collection, so shouldn't be hurting if you want to play Halo 2.
Yep.
Another note, Battleborn looks like it's going to be going free-to-play next year. Yay.
Man.
Nobody.
Yeah, that was a game that got bitch-slapped by Overwatch, and then the price just fell quickly. Then like $20
immediately.
A couple months afterwards.
Yeah.
Being part of a Humble Bundle right away is like not a good sign for that game.
Yeah, Gearbox, not having great luck with that one.
Yeah.
Part of it, I think, is because, well, Overwatch kind of came out and stole most of its thunder, but part of it also makes me wonder just how good that game was to begin with.
Yeah. I guess part of the rumors of this was supposedly that 2K pushed back on Gearbox actually wanting this to be free to play from the beginning. Sort of said they needed to make it $60, which kind of fits with how they handled Evolve at launch.
Yeah.
And sort of pushing this, not necessarily limited suite of features, but a game that probably didn't have necessarily the content to stay $60 for very long.
Yeah. Evolve was really kind of a mess because, it was a $60 game, and then there was a crap ton of microtransactions along with it.
That was a game that should have launched like $10 or $20, and then people could buy in at what they wanted to, because the concept was cool.
Yeah.
But
well, now that's gone free to play, and it's seems to have actually invigorated that game quite a bit.
That they can actually sort of involve the community more and make it more of what they want.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the times, a lot of this multiplayer only stuff, unless you're coming with an MMO set of features in terms of the types of interactions you can make, you don't need to be launching at $60. you know, and like I think I'm bothered in general by the free-to-play model. That's a different story entirely. But, you know, if you're just doing multiplayer only and there's no other meat there, you know, I think if you're trying to get to that $60 price point or 80 or whatever, you should supplement that with things that people can buy rather than putting out the game at 60. Because I think we've shown, look at Battleborn, look at Evolve, all that stuff. The games don't do well because people are automatically going – I think people have an expectation at the $60 price point that they're going to get a certain amount of content. And if that content is entirely dependent on other people logging in, I mean, you just don't know if you're ever even going to get your money out of that, because so many of these games, especially shooters, like the communities come and go within 3 months. Yeah. So why spend $60 for a game that's going to die in 3 months?
Yeah. Titanfall found this out the hard way.
Yep.
And that game got saved by EA Access. Hmm. Being able to give it at least a steady amount of people that will play that game. Hmm. It was interesting following this story because they have an update here about Randy Pitchford kind of shitting all over the story. There are no plans to convert Battleborn to free-to-play. But then Jason Schreier over at Kotaku, the press sneak fuck, replied to him talking about doing a trial version of the game. Like, well, that's a free-to-play version of it. And somehow be able to upgrade it to the full retail version with DLC. And sort of he says, we need to sort out our plans first and then announce them. Basically says probably sometime next year.
Yeah. No, frankly, after Aliens Colonial Marines, I don't believe anything Randy Pitchford says.
Well, yeah, he is a magician. Can't trust those guys.
Any of you guys fans of Runner 3? Or will be? Because that's been announced, apparently.
Yeah, new BitTrip Runner.
Yeah.
The second one was great game.
That game was hard. Oh my god, that game was hard.
Yeah, you can make it easy, though, if you wanted. Because it had nice little difficulty options, and you didn't have to go for, like, all of the pluses or all the little secret and collectible things. Mm. But that was a lot of fun to go after. Yeah, so they're making a sequel, Runner 3, coming next year. Runner
3 coming next year. Maybe it'll revive some of the other BitTrip games. Those were pretty good. BitTrip Beat was probably my favorite. So, yeah, do another one of those, please.
Yeah, they put out a big bundle on PS4 and Vita called The BitTrip.
Yeah.
Just has all that stuff. And they're talking about, they got their dev blog here, and they got a bunch of info, mostly teasery stuff. They say they got most of the characters locked down, but taking suggestions to see if there's any more they might want to look at. But also talk about their, like, if you collected all of the gold and went to that, like, NES-style bonus level, they're going to have, like, a new thing. They show, like, a little example of sort of a background element, sort of looking more like a Frizz Freeling, Pink Panther kind of style, Hanna-Barbera kind of thing. The sun just has, like, a weird giant nose. That looks pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, next year.
Yeah.
Check that out. And sometimes we wonder, like, at what point indie games become profitable. Turns out for Soma, that's 450,000 copies. Apparently they've hit that.
Yep. With the help of being on the Humble Monthly bundle in September. Though that wasn't necessarily sales itself. They got a big lump sum from that part of the deal.
Okay.
So eventually it helped push them to about 450 is what they rounded to. And say that they've started making money off it now.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, talking about how the game cost about 10 times what Amnesia the Dark Descent cost them to make. And took them about 5 years to make it, too.
Yeah. Of course, they don't say what that amount actually was. But, yeah.
That's still a lot for an indie game.
Yeah. 450,000 copies multiplied by, you know, whatever the price it's selling at, and you kind of get the idea of how much it might have cost.
Yeah, as an indie developer, some serious heartburn at having 450,000 as the break-even point.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be happy with 20,000, depending on how much it cost me to make. But yeah, if you're making a game like Soma, which is, yeah, it's an indie game, but there's some production value involved there.
Yeah.
So, you know, voice acting, there's, you know, there's quite a bit of environments to work with. Yeah, you gotta spend the money to make that look good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I'm glad that they've become profitable and will continue to scare the shit out of people in the future.
Yeah, I think they got two new games they're working on. They haven't announced them yet, I don't think.
Mm.
But yeah.
All right, so a couple of Amazon stories before we wrap up the show for this week. Twitch. Oh, yeah. They're kind of killing their, what was their subscription plan.
Yeah.
Where you could basically subscribe to a particular
Twitch Turbo. And,
yeah. Twitch, which is like the dumbest name ever. So yeah, that's going away.
It necessarily allows you to get like faster streams or anything like that.
No, it doesn't. It's just, you can support your particular
streamer. It's marketing.
Yeah. Well, now that's going to be included with Amazon Prime, because everything has to be included with Amazon Prime.
Well, that's good for people who already had Prime.
Yeah.
So you now you get like, no ads on your streams.
Yep.
You get like no one free subscription.
It makes Amazon Prime gradually more palatable as it continues adding things that you would want to get on their own.
Yeah.
Makes that cost of admission a little more
feasible. Don't forget now, you can also get Amazon Prime as a monthly. I mean, you don't have to pay yearly anymore.
Yeah, that's
all. And what's the cost for that?
$11 a month.
Yeah.
I think if you do it lump sum for the whole year, it's like $99.
Yeah, it's $99 for a year or $11 or $12.
That's about $100.
Yeah, and if you have a college email address, I want to say it's $40.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, it's Amazon is continuing to add value to the Prime plan, basically.
Yeah, you also get like free DLC for some games. I think if you have it right now,
yeah.
You get like a free Hearthstone pack, a free costume for Smite, and some game called Streamline, which is a Twitch streaming oriented game where you can play with your viewers.
Hmm. Oh, okay.
That sounds like the sort of thing you give away for free. Wrong.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I guess one of the other things.
Twitch.
Yeah, I guess one of the other things you get is a free Twitch subscription to a channel.
Yeah.
I guess channels that have paid subscriptions to them.
Yeah.
Which I remember looking at the Twitter hashtag, and it's like a bunch of Twitter channel people like, hey, throw us one of those free subs.
Yeah.
Give us the money because Amazon will essentially pay for your subscription for that month or forever. I don't know.
Yeah, it's forever or as long as you continue to want to make it that one.
Yeah. That just seems weird. It's like a thing that's not a permanent thing.
Mm.
Unlike, say, the audiobook stuff, Audible.
Yeah.
Like where you get the one and then that's it. That's you own that thing.
Yeah.
Even if you unsubscribe.
You know, it's kind of like a Patreon style model, basically.
Yeah, I'm not that into Twitch to be like subscribing to people.
Me neither, but there are a lot of people that are.
And a lot of women will take off their, not their clothes, but they'll show you stuff.
Yeah. So.
You ever see the ones where women have like the text to audio stuff?
Mm.
People just sit there and post the most vile shit that'll say at them. So imagine what Twitch chat says normally.
Oof.
Imagine them trying to get the computer to say that out loud.
You know what's weird about all this stuff is that I guess it's the same thing for me, like showing my age, but I don't feel the need to stream things. I don't really feel the need to watch anybody's Twitch channels. Like I can't live vicariously watching someone else play something. Which obviously a lot of people can because we look at like kind of like the rise of this. I get like looking at tournaments or anything like that, but watching some guy play in Scream or whatever, or watching some girl play in a top like that looks like a bra, it doesn't do anything for me. So I'm kind of wondering how I've missed the boat here, because I don't enjoy watching people play games. It's not like sports, like where I could enjoy watching basketball or football and still enjoy playing it myself. I'm like, well, there's no way this, with the exception, I think, of a few people I'd watch, like, those people aren't better than me in the first place. They're not doing something I can't do. So yeah. Why bother watching? You know what I mean? Maybe that's just
me. That's how the young people are. They're watching YouTube channels and the Twitch streams, and that's sort of their replacement for just sitting at the TV watching cartoons all day.
Yeah.
They sit there and watch PewDiePie or whoever. Which reminds me of like a Simpsons thing of Principal Skinner when he's following. Is it when he's following Bart Simpson? He's like, maybe I'm wrong? No, it's the children.
Oh, the children must be wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and along with that, we also found out 3 more games that Amazon is going to be putting out. One of these actually looks really cool. The other two, kind of, if you ask me.
Yeah, so New World is one of the games they announced, which is about colonizing a supernatural version of 17th century North America. It's an open world game.
Yeah.
I guess MMO-ish. Sandbox game.
Yep.
Which is interesting. It's going to have Twitch integration and all that stuff.
Of course.
Yeah, broadcaster-led events, achievements, and rewards.
Yeah, that's not the one that was interesting.
Is it Crucible? Nope. A battle of the last survivor on a hostile alien world.
Hmm. Nope, don't care.
That kind of sounds DayZ-ish.
Yeah.
Live streaming the battles and interacting with the viewers, of course.
Yeah, of course, because it's Twitch.
And the last one is Breakaway.
And that's the one that's interesting.
It's a MOBA-style sports brawler.
Yeah, that's like a mashup of 3 distinct things that really probably shouldn't go together, but from what I'm looking at, what I've seen of it, actually does look kind of cool. this is a Double Helix joint.
Is it?
Yep.
Okay, well, that's about for a reason.
Yeah.
It's rated T for teen.
Yeah.
Violence, partial nudity, mild language, use of alcohol, and use of tobacco.
Yep.
As you do.
All the bases covered. Yeah, this actually does look
quite cool. I got an alpha sign up now if you want to get on that.
Yeah. One of the weird things about it is that breakaway matches would actually have like kind of a gambling element included in them, and I think that's maybe going a little bit too far with the Twitch integration.
Gamble your Twitch accounts on this game.
Well, not really. It's like watching the streams, you'd earn credits, and then you could gamble those credits on matches. Yeah, but it's like limited to that particular game, that particular stream. It's not like overall on your entire account. So I guess I could kind of see that it might work if it's, you know, restricted to that specific thing. But
yeah, you can earn loyalty points, wager their points on key moments in the game, participate in viewer polls, and move their way up a viewer loyalty point leaderboard.
Hmm.
Stream Plus is what they call that feature.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it rewards you for
meta streams.
Don't get it, but I'm obviously not the audience for that particular feature. But the game itself looks kind of cool, and I'll probably play it.
Sounds like a bunch of us aren't.
Yeah, we're old. That's the problem.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I guess we'll finally finish off with PlayStation Experience 2016. December 3rd, 4th in Anaheim. Confirmed. Exposed.
And the finals for Capcom Cup 2016. $250,000 in prizes given out.
Yeah, oof. That's happening there. So,
$60 for 2-day early bird.
Yeah.
So get that while they're still there.
Yeah, get it while it's hot. I'm pretty sure we're going to try to have a couple of people over there.
Yeah.
Maybe end up with a few podcast guests in the process. Yeah, you never know.
We can hope.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to see what their keynote's going to have on it.
Well, here's the thing. With the things we're expecting to hear over the course of the next couple months, the gaming landscape is not going to be the way it is now when PlayStation Experience takes place.
PlayStation
Experience could be interesting.
Yeah, PlayStation Experience will be.
NX. Know what the NX is?
We will hopefully know what the NX is.
Yeah. We'll know what the NX is. Well, PlayStation VR will be out in the wild.
As will
be out in the wild.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think the Pro. I think the Pro PS Pro is going to end up being the same way the new 3DS was. I think there's going to be a couple. This time there'll be a couple million hardcore players that are going to buy it, but a bunch of other people like me are going to go, well, I haven't played this thing enough anyway. Why the fuck am I going to give somebody else $400 for this? it's kind of the same thing with Scorpio. Like Scorpio feels like an upgrade that should have happened a long time ago, or maybe not to the point of like the 4K stuff, but maybe this is what Microsoft should have launched, and they would have kept a good chunk of their people. Instead, they focused on shit like TV integration instead of making sure that the hardware was capable enough of hitting 1080p on every game. Scorpio has me interested, but only because I still really like the Xbox ecosystem. And despite how Microsoft fucked this up, I feel more inclined to trust them than Sony, who has shown that whenever they get ahead, they don't give a fuck. And, we were talking about the NES Mini earlier. Somebody's like, what if they did, I think I was on NeoGAF, and somebody said, like, what if they do, like, a mini PlayStation? And I'm like, well, that means it would still have a fucking disc read error. And you'd have to put it upside down. Like, the big differentiator between Microsoft and Sony for me has always been that Microsoft acknowledged the Red Ring. Sony never acknowledged any of their hardware defects. And so that's something that's always kind of given me pause for buying their equipment and any of their kit, because it's like, what's going to go fucking wrong with this thing? I mean, you guys remember, what was it with the PSP? Ken Kutaragi with the fucking square button was like, it's designed that way when it wouldn't register half the time. Like, how fucking stupid do you think we are? Like, come on. You know, so I want to see Microsoft be able to be more dominant, because I think there's a responsibility level there that some of the other tech giants haven't really ever stepped in. So that's why I'd be much more inclined to buy a Scorpio than I would the PS Pro. The PS Pro strikes me as a device that is designed only to appeal to the hardcore people that are on the PlayStation side that are still too pussy to get a PC. Like, if you really want the sparkles, get a fucking PC. Because, especially since they came out and said, not everybody's, people can design the games the way they want. They can do the frame rate, the threshold, blah, 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 blah. They can do all that however they want. So we've seen it happen time and time again. We know that developers, if they take advantage of that, are going to go with the prettier stuff, keep it at 30 frames per second, which is the exact opposite of what a bunch of hardcore people want. So this is really just designed for people that haven't gotten the PlayStation yet or are trying to jump in and want to have the latest hardware. I almost feel like it's kind of cynical, because this generation alone, I don't really feel like I've had enough experiences that I would even consider next gen. There's not been a game that came out this generation that's had me go, well, they couldn't have done this last gen. So, and then, we have the VR thing. So I'm just kind of, I guess I'm kind of apathetic to the whole generation in general, because I don't feel like there's really been any new experiences. They've all just been prettier.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that.
Yeah, I think this generation wasn't necessarily about new experiences, just better experiences. Just being able to have games that don't always go too different from what we've done before, but just makes that better.
Right, but I think every generation, though, has always had – there's always been something, some game type that has popped up each generation. And it has been this thing where it's like, now we could do this because of this technology. And there really hasn't been anything like that. It's literally like, if you looked at the jump between 8-bit and 16-bit, the big jump was much faster games, much prettier games, bigger sprites, much more colors. And then the tail end of that led into these RPGs that started getting massive. And then you jumped into the 32-bit generation and you had people dealing with 3D, which of course was tremendous, right? And then towards the tail end of that generation, you had people dealing with fully 3D worlds, like stuff like, well, of course, with the Nintendo 64, they launched with Super Mario 64. And then you had a huge chunk of RPGs come out that were doing things that people had never seen before. And then when you got into the PS2 era, it was like, here's all of that stuff. And now here's some first-person shooters. And here's some crazy shit you probably haven't seen before. And then with the PS3 and with the Xbox 360, it was, all right, now we're going nuts with the first-person shooters. But not only that, we got third-person shooters, and now we're moving shit over like Oblivion and Morrowind and these kinds of games. So here are these PC experiences that you can now have on this generation. And then now this generation, it's like, more third-person shooters, okay. Oh, look at that! More first-person shooters, okay. I can see that. No RPGs, okay. Oh well, we got Skyrim 5 years ago. Oh, they're going to re-release that. Okay, that's good. Like there hasn't been. I can't point to one game this generation that I feel was like, this is why I bought this hardware. Besides, like something I wanted to play, right? But there's not anything when I'm looking at my shelf where I'm going, this couldn't have been achieved on a PC or this is something I haven't, you know, an experience I haven't had before. Because you can point to stuff like Uncharted 4. Like Uncharted 4 is beautiful, right? But it's the fourth Uncharted. Like there's nothing new that I'm playing. Yeah. I think probably this generation, the only action game really that surprised me so far was Sunset Overdrive. Just because there's a rhythm to that game that I haven't felt in a very long time. It really feels kind of like Tony Hawk mixed with an action game. So that was enjoyable. But, again, more of a hybrid. And you can even go back to the other stuff that we were talking. Remember the Dreamcast? How much cool shit came out on the Dreamcast that we'd never seen before? You know,
Pretty much all of the cool shit that we
have. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we just don't see – there's nothing like that going on right now. And I think that, like, especially for me, it's sort of leading me to be apathetic because all we've really gotten is bigger worlds, which aren't necessarily filled with anything interesting. We've gotten graphics that are prettier, but people still can't seem to hit a lot of times, you know, 30 frames a second consistently. I mean, really, I feel like the big push this generation has been switching to new hardware and then with Microsoft having the backwards compatibility. So I hope whatever the NX is going to be interesting. We all think we have an idea of what it is, but I'm just kind of haven't really enjoyed this generation now that I'm actually saying this out loud. Like not enjoyed is not, that's a bad word. There's still a lot of fun games, but it's nothing new. There's nothing that has really gotten me excited in a very long time, because even stuff that I have gotten excited for, there's always something wrong. Like, I remember getting super excited for the latest Batman game because I'm a fucking Batman fan. And then watching how badly Warner Brothers fucked up, like, and I would never play that kind of game on a PC, but then watching them fuck that up, you know, just to the extent that they did was really comical. Watching Microsoft just completely shit the bed with 343 on Halo with the Master Chief Collection was just like, oh my God, what the fuck is wrong with you people? Ubisoft, same thing. Like, oh look, here, we'll just put up this game and people's faces will randomly disappear. Like, it's crazy to me. And so those are the experiences that we've gotten that really have just been like rushed. You know, they've been bigger, but they haven't been better. They're prettier, but there's not any substance to that beauty. So I could keep ranting about this. I'll stop. So it's just something I'm thinking about.
Yeah, I would say the thing that actually was pretty much new this generation that you couldn't do last generation is all of the native social stuff. Streaming, capture, screenshots, this way of being able to actually share what you've been doing beyond just, hey, I got this achievement or I got this trophy. It's like, here's this stupid thing I did. I'm going to post this on Twitter and developers are going to actually notice it and retweet it or whatever. And it's like, yeah, that's something you couldn't do before. Yeah. You couldn't show those bugs.
The social interaction is cool.
Huge. It's feeding into what's, like we talked about before, with Twitch and YouTube being huge. That's just a smart thing for Sony and Microsoft to capitalize on and make it just easier, lower the bar of entry for that stuff. And let it get to weird things like, oh, there's these people just started this like talk show on the PS4 streaming stuff that eventually got that stuff banned from Twitch because they couldn't handle it. And now they just fully support it with the food channels and the art stuff. That makes you wonder why the hell they were rebelling against it in the first place.
It's that and I think that's cool. But that is not, like, that's a new feature for a system, but not for actual, like, gaming. Like, I think, and to your point, I do think some of that is cool. Like, you know, I was a guy that played Grand Theft Auto 5 heavily this generation, and just seeing some of the crap that people had happen to them out in the world, just that sort of emergent gameplay, just because there was a certain amount of things happening all at once, was really neat to see. And really, actually, I think probably if I'm probably the most fun I've had this generation as far as anything doing online or something that I thought was new that I hadn't really seen before was actually Grand Theft Auto Online. Because do you guys ever mess around with Forge with Halo where you can you can create all kinds of cool shit? I mean, they took an open world game and slapped Forge in it. I ended up playing this a friend of mine got me into it, because before it was just like, oh, I'll play this the way that I would play Grand Theft Auto except with like friends. And then when they started letting people edit stuff and create new game modes and new game types, that's when it just went completely fucking off the rocker. Like, there's this one game type we were playing. It was called like FBI versus insurgents. And what they did is that they would have these armored cars, right? And you would be out in the middle of this super long road, but you would be in the air on these platforms that were relatively small, and then people would drive these large armored ATVs up these ramps to try and land on you when you were on the platform, and you had bazookas, and the idea was to blow those guys up as they were flying by. And it is absolutely ridiculous. It's borderline retarded, and it is some of the most fun I have ever had playing anything online. And so people would just come up with these absolutely insane scenarios, because, you know, kind of like that's what Grand Theft Auto does. And like, I mean, the last update they did was basically Ricky Bobby the game, and it's just these stupid stunt races and gotta go fast, and like that shit is cool. Like, the ability to keep bringing that stuff in, I think, is probably the only thing that this generation has really brought in that I think has been game changing. But I still feel like it's on such a smaller scale than I guess that it could be. And then looking at it as a gamer who plays on pretty much everything, I mean, this is shit that the PC has been doing for 10 years. So seeing it happen to consoles is great. And the social interaction is great, but I'm still holding out for something to actually be like mind blowing. And I haven't seen it yet.
I don't think you're going to see it, because it's not going to be an exponential leap every single generation. We're at the point where that's becoming a smaller thing, where now this gen, it's about Sony and Microsoft just offering you as much variety, as much depth of options for what you can do. You want to play, you know, the big budget, you know, sports, action, shooter games? Here's all that. You want the cheaper stuff? Here's tons of indies. They're falling all over themselves trying to get their games out on these platforms. You don't have much money to spend. Here's tons of free-to-play stuff. A bunch of those games you can play without having to put any money in. You want your multiplayer stuff. Here's tons of that. And it's being able to allow you to sort of just have it your way. It's the McDonald's generation, essentially. There's such a huge variety of things, huge...
Well, and I would agree with that, but I don't think all of it's very good, though. That's the problem. I think McDonald's is a great analogy. Yeah, it's food. Yeah, it's filling, but it's not that good.
Yeah, it'll leave you with a headache half an hour later. So,
yeah,
that's kind of how I feel about some of the indie games I played on PlayStation 4.
I would say some of my most favorite games of all time have released this generation. Things like Rocket League, It's a game I still come back to a year and a half later.
Yeah.
Still playing. I was playing it earlier today. Because I'm just enjoying the hell out of that Rumble mode, waiting for the next update that adds a whole new arena to play in. You know, I don't have to put any more money into it if I don't want to. But, you know, that's something we couldn't really have last gen. Brown Paris is like the first time we had that sort of long-living game that just got constant updates, adding new things. And then it didn't bump up the sales as much as people as they wanted. And everybody was like, yeah, we don't need to do any of this. And this generation came around, it's like, oh, we can actually do this, and people actually seem to want it now. People expect it, that their $60 lasts them for a while without you just saying, hey, buy this season pass, buy the season pass, buy the season pass, buy the season pass. Here's this new content. Did you buy the season pass yet? No? No? What? What the fuck's wrong with you? Buy the season pass.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I think it's the other way around. I think Rocket League is more of an exception than anything else because you have that longevity built in with the season pass. So it's not – I mean, fuck, look at Forza Horizon 3. Like, if you look at the packs that came with the Ultimate Edition, it's supposed to be like 6 months worth of content. Like, if you buy that shit on its own, I think it's like $50. Like, for me, I think the two biggest ones this generation for developers that gave shit away for free that legitimately made the game more robust would be Rocket League and Grand Theft Auto Online. Grand Theft Auto Online has basically gotten like 5 expansions for fucking free. Like, the amount of content that you can play in that is absurd. And you can do whatever you can really play however you want. I think those are the exceptions, though. Like, I think people were adding content last generation, too, and having it go on for a while. Halo was really good at that. And we've talked about it on the show, too. I think a good chunk of longevity now, the way the developers look at it, is going to be through user-created content rather than stuff that they do, because people will make this shit for free if you let them.
Yeah. Which is what Sony really needs to address when it comes to Fallout 4 mods on the PS4 version.
Yeah, dude, I know, Pat, that wasn't a big deal for you, but the thing is, especially having gotten back into New Vegas and seeing the amount of stuff available for those games that extend the life beyond what they initially were is nothing short of staggering. And we're talking like little stuff. Like there's a mod in Skyrim that replaces the dragon's screech from the dragons in Skyrim with Macho Man Randy Savage yelling, "Oh yeah."
Yeah.
Little stuff like that, to complete overhauls, complete expansion packs that are fully voiced and everything. Like, just, I was looking just for like New Vegas, of course, which was, you know, if you did it on consoles, was last gen. But just like New Vegas alone, there's a complete rework of the entire game. I looked at Skyrim. It's the same way. Fallout 4 has a few less options simply because of the way Bethesda programmed the game, and certain things actually have to happen in the story. It's not as freeform. Mm-hmm. But just the amount of stuff that you can add to that and that people are doing just to do it, just for free. Like, here's a way I can be creative in this world that I like. I can add to it. I can do this. I can do that. Like, it's really staggering. And the fact that Sony hasn't jumped on with that, I cannot. It doesn't make any sense, because all you're doing is making your game viable for longer without having to put any money into it.
Yeah, and by not approving that update, presumably, that Bethesda has ready to go, you're actually making the PS4 version inferior to, you know, the Xbox One at this point, because it's got that.
Yeah, which is ironic, because a lot of people, you know, this is anecdotal, but a lot of people that I know and people that I talk to have stuck with the PS4 because it's technically superior to the Xbox One. So them not, you know, I think I have to wonder, too, if maybe that's more just a Japanese attitude. Microsoft is an American company. And, you know, this is the modding scene for those Western-style RPGs is something that has been around forever. And, you know, maybe these Japanese – well, I don't know. I can't even say that, because last gen, I mean, you know, it's not like Elder Scrolls or Fallout were, you know, tiny sellers. You know, it's not like they didn't move units. So I don't know. But yeah, I think Sony really, really, really screwed up on that one because they did make it inferior. And on top of that, it's taking away sales for both of them.
Yeah, it's something weird with that situation that I don't think Bethesda is completely not at fault with that because they knew that there could be issues and still kept saying, we're going to be putting mods here.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to keep doing this. Now they're just throwing their own partner under the bus. You wonder if they're just trying to use their angry fans to attack Sony and force their hand that way.
Well, yeah, and that would work. But, I mean, the other part of it is that Bethesda doesn't really have anything to gain by that. I mean, they've made the bulk of the money that they're going to make from Fallout with the sales that they've had, and they've got the DLC out and everything else like that. I mean, there is not a good reason for Sony to have that position, especially when Microsoft is willing to do it. I mean, we saw this same sort of posturing when it came to cross-play games as far as, you know, being able to play an online game between the different systems where, you know, one side's going, we're just waiting on them, you know. And so this actually strikes me as something extremely similar to that. And, you know, Sony is a Japanese company. If this is something they're not comfortable with, they're not
comfortable. Well, the people that are running PlayStation are European.
Yeah, they're European.
Andrew House is running the whole thing now.
They still go back to a Japanese conglomerate.
Hmm. Yeah, but they're letting the PlayStation group run things the way they need to because they're the one group under the whole Sony umbrella that's consistently making money, able to essentially run the whole company through PlayStation. As they rename like their streaming service PlayStation View. They don't name it just Sony View or anything like that. It's PlayStation tied. Because that's the horse. That's the breadwinning horse right now for them. And yeah, like the crossplay stuff, that's not necessarily just Sony. That's Microsoft as well, because throwing those two services together, if you just remove all the security stuff, you could easily make those two services go together just fine. It's a lot of posturing from developers to be able to say, hey, we can make this work. You guys just have to let us flip the switch. And it's easy for developers to say that when they're not the ones that have to look at how they make both networks talk to each other, how to do it without compromising the security of either one. And allowing for loopholes that could potentially lead to their systems getting cracked.
See, I think that's horseshit. And no, seriously,
we've had people from Sony, former Adam Boys, talk about how there's a lot more to it than just flipping a switch.
Oh, I understand. I work for a software company. I'm well aware of that kind of stuff. But the basic protocols for getting these two systems to talk to each other, regardless of how you have them secure, is not difficult. I work with pieces of software every day that interact with multiple different companies that have completely different setups. That portion of it is not hard. It has to be one side or the other being willing to go, okay, here's what we're going to be able to give you downstream and here's what we're going to give you upstream. Yeah. And that's the core component of those things, talking to one another. There are plenty of systems every single day, regardless whether they're fucking Xbox Live or PlayStation Network, that interface and integrate together without issues, even though some code is from the 80s and some is from 2014. Like, the basic premise what's behind getting the stuff to talk to each other is just packet data. So I could get, like, from that standpoint, if Sony doesn't want to give a certain amount or they don't want to let Microsoft see a certain amount of their system so they can make that stuff integrate because they've been hacked and because these are their competitors. That makes sense. But I also think if they're going to go that route, they should also be upfront about it because this is the second time Sony's been called out for something like this. If they just want to come out and say, look, this would make us give access to people that we're not comfortable giving it to or a level of access we're not comfortable giving to a third party, I think all of that would be understandable. But they haven't said shit on either one, unless I'm missing something.
They've definitely talked about it, saying they're looking into it, obviously. I think
that's the proverbial checks in the mail, right?
Right.
We're looking into this. Of course you are.
Well, here's the thing. It's always two to tango. Just because Microsoft says we're open to this doesn't mean they're actually open to it. That they're actually got everything ready to go.
Right. But they can say whatever the hell they want. They really might not take the PR hit.
Whereas they look like the heroes when they might actually be ready to go.
Well, see, that's the thing, though. I think, because earlier you were talking about now everything's being run through the PlayStation brand, I still believe they're absolutely a Japanese-centric company, and they are taking stuff from a Japanese conglomerate that where they have to tailor their behavior on what's going to make those people happy. But at the same time, if we're going to go with your argument of, well, this is being run by Europeans, and they're doing it this way and this way, let's not forget, Sony was the one that shit on Microsoft during E3 with that whole used game thing.
Yeah.
So they're real willing to take shots when it's something they can take shots on. So with
and
that
Microsoft's
in mind,
Microsoft's been doing the same thing the last few weeks.
Well,
they've been dancing in the aisles at any potential opportunity to say "fuck you, fuck you, fuck you."
But Bethesda's not Microsoft.
No, but they can throw their weight around because they're one of the big publishers that has a game that whenever they put it out will sell 10 million. On any platform they put it on, easily if they do the proper marketing at least.
Right, but what I'm saying is that if Sony was in the position where they could turn around and point this at Microsoft, they would. That's why I'm inclined to believe that what's actually being said from two different companies is probably the truth, because Sony has no problem coming out and doing that type of thing and being very Sega from the 90s like. When it suits them, when they have that ground to stand on. But when they don't, they're super quiet. And that's what we're seeing happen now.
Yeah. Well, they were doing that all throughout the PS4 Pro's life, just not addressing it, just letting it go. Because even trying to shut it down is confirmation of that. Even though the confirmation was developers talking about it in line at GDC. Then somebody happened to be nearby that actually worked for one of the sites. Yeah.
I mean, we could keep going on. That's a hardware product. I mean, I think that's a little bit different. But
what I'll say, to cap off, because we're kind of running along here, is I think there's a fundamental difference in the two companies' attitudes.
Yeah.
We've got Microsoft, who came out swinging, made a huge mistake, and then owned up to it and spent, okay, this is hard. How do we fix it? And went about the steps to fix it, including things like backwards compatibility and making the Xbox and PC talk to each other, and the universal Windows platform, which Tim Sweeney hates, but I think he's kind of full of it. And then we have Sony, who hears the Microsoft announcement of backwards compatibility and says, "Oh, that must have been hard." It's two fundamentally different philosophies, and while I like both companies, I'm not going to give them a pass.
I mean, that's
not something like backward compatibility.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the biggest thing here is looking at that stuff, looking at it from that eye of, why are you behaving this way? And we can chart Sony's behavior for the last 15 years based on these kinds of things. That's why I'm also coming to the conclusions that I am. So, I don't know. I think, bottom line, I still think it's – I hope if Scorpio comes out and we have the Pro and all that stuff, I really hope we end up with a Super Nintendo Genesis-style situation where things are just different enough that there are going to be different games for each that capitalize on each, rather than it being two systems that are very samey and are producing the same games with the same level of quality with, three extra frames on one system and, three less on another. Like, I still think that's probably the best time as far as seeing any sort of innovation in gaming was when you had, those platforms that were technologically different and could really provide different style, styles of games. Whereas, I said, right now we have two of the same boxes essentially kind of fighting, and the only core difference is, well, I can snap and I can talk to this thing with this stupid fucking camera, or, I can plug VR goggles into this one, or, Like, that's not – I don't feel like those are real differentiating. I mean, the bottom line is, like, I don't know if any of you guys ever read Ray Barnhold's magazine, Scroll.
Yeah.
But he, you know, he talked a lot about video game culture and that, and he says the most important part of video game culture is the games. It's not the social aspect. It's not anything else. It's not putting a Nintendo controller on a T-shirt or anything else like that. The culture exists because of the games. And so I look at this the same way, like, as far as a cultural step, you know, to even go back to something I was talking about like 20 minutes ago is I do want to see something new. And I'm hoping that with this diversion of hardware, where the 4K is what they're trying to get to, but the way they're getting to it, the way it's powered, everything is very different. I'm hoping will actually lead to some of those shifts.
Yeah.
Well, I would say multi-platform this generation is much better than it was in the Genesis Super Nintendo generation, where you'd have what are supposed to be the same games on both platforms, but for whatever reason, different developers are signed to them, so they just turn out completely differently. Mm-hmm. Or you get stuff Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter situations where this one game is gimped as hell on Super Nintendo. Though.
That wasn't the developers. That was the hardware.
Yeah. Hardware was different enough that they couldn't necessarily do the same game to the same quality on both.
Yeah,
one version got shortchanged, and those people got screwed essentially.
Yeah, no,
they had to deal with it with their sweating characters instead of the blood or things like that.
Oh man! And then I remember Nintendo slapping back and be like, "Well, Mortal Kombat 2's got blood and fatalities. Suck it, Sega. Play it loud."
Then you have like things like Castlevania games are very different on both of them. Trying to think of other ones. The sports games were very different, even though EA was making sports games for both. They're both.
And a lot of that came down to the fact that the Genesis chip was basically its main processor was double the speed of the Super Nintendo's. I think it clocked at like 7.2 megahertz compared to the Nintendo's. I think it was like 3.6.
Yeah,
and you know, and that just that came out of Sega's. Genesis, so to speak, of being an arcade manufacturer. You know, they tailored their home hardware to create arcade-like experiences at home that were more about things moving fast and shit flying across the screen, and that wasn't Nintendo style. That's why we got, you know, I think F-Zero is the only truly fast game on that system that I can think of. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm curious to see where this stuff goes from here. I'm actually really, more so than I have been in a very long time, I'm really getting excited about whatever Nintendo is going to do, because I think that this Nintendo has always kind of, you know, walked to the beat of their own drum. And I think that's been very detrimental to them for a very long time. But I think now would be the best time for them to come out with something that is, this is strictly a Nintendo thing and this is what we can deliver. And I think if it's even somewhat technologically cutting edge, just like halfway, as long as it's not like 9 Wii U's glued together, which is what they've done in the last couple of generations, is just take the previous hardware, stick another piece of that hardware together and double the power. Like, as long as they don't do that, I think they'll be okay. But then, you know, reading the mobile chips and stuff like that, it sounds like they're being pretty smart about this. So, that's probably the only big excitement I got going on for the rest of the year.
Yeah,
we just need them to reveal it.
Yeah, we just need to start talking about that damn thing.
Just tell us about it, damn it.
Well, I think they would have revealed it for the holiday for this year, and would have sold it. Nintendo's never really missed a Christmas, but there must have been. I think there's probably been some reining in the management over there to go, you know what? Yes, we will miss the Christmas season, but we can't fuck this launch up.
I think that was entirely Onuma.
Yeah.
No, I'm not gonna make Zelda by Christmas. It's gotta be March.
That's why they pushed it from holiday to spring.
Yeah.
We're just waiting.
Yeah. It's like I could try to finish it and then we'd release something that, you know, is buggy and broken and then that would do nobody good.
Just tell me what
they want right now is another black eye.
Yeah.
Well, they might have been like, we don't want to Microsoft this. We saw what they did to Halo.
Yeah, and they're not even dealing with multiplayer.
No.
Or end up with Red Rings.
Yeah. That would be funny. Nintendo at this point talking shit. That would be hilarious.
Yeah. But yeah, we do know, I'm pretty sure that Nintendo's already manufacturing the NXs at this point, because if it's got to be out, if it's going to be out in March,
like, we already know that. Foxconn.
Yeah, Foxconn got it, I think.
Yeah, Foxconn, dude. Basically,
they laughed at the original order and then said, "Yeah, we can do half that."
It's like, no, but thanks anyway.
Yeah.
So we'll do half of that. Kind of interesting, though. The way that they're just basically going the other way as far as home consoles go.
Well, the funny part is actually this might be the most forward-thinking Nintendo has been. I mean, if you look at not necessarily what gamers are saying or to a certain extent some developers, but you know, the trend for mobile platform development, is particularly as it's been sped with the Android platform and with the iOS platform, is that basically every two new phones that are out leapfrog the previous, you know, the one from two generations ago, completely leapfrogs it in terms of spec. When we're talking the graphic coprocessor, the speed of the current processor, you know, now everything is, you know, 64-bit, which they didn't have before. Like, I mean, the actual technological jumps in the mobile space are actually really staggering. And so Nintendo kind of going with that, like a lot of these mobile chips can do a lot. Like there's a lot that they can do as far as what they can push, as long as they're with the with components that can take advantage of them. And Nintendo has always specialized in being able to kind of take some of those off-the-shelf parts and get them to work together in a certain way and really get longevity out of that. So this might really be the smartest thing that they've done, especially since, you know, with the way that they're talking about the NX, is that they aren't going to do that. We're going to, you know, tape two of our previous system together, and then here's the power. Like, this is completely new for them. And going, you know, with the, I think it was a Tegra chip is what they were saying. So
yeah, Tegra X1.
Yeah. So going with a Tegra chip, I mean, that's brilliant as far as integration with mobile. We know what they're moving towards with putting mobile games out on those platforms. I mean, we had Shigeru Miyamoto show up at an April conference and motherfuckers lost their minds. So,
yeah,
you know, I think this is going to be a really smart move for them. And I think it's going to make them competitive for a long time, because it also means if they're going with that platform, I can't imagine that they also won't be able to iterate on the NX platform, particularly using those mobile chips, and keep backwards compatibility and everything else of that, and get into the same kind of upgrade cycle that Microsoft and Sony want to do. But I think they'll be able to do it cheaper.
Yeah. And it is, like, you know, really interesting philosophically too, because Nintendo is not known for drawing a line in the sand, and with the NX they're actually having to do that.
Yeah,
they're dealing on a little bit lower class hardware than Sony and Microsoft, so they can stretch it in different ways that those two can't.
Yeah, but you know, it's setting up a longer game, because you know, like Lee, you said, these mobile chips, the development on those is going so fast. This is where the real innovation is happening right now.
Yeah.
Desktops, we've kind of hit a peak.
Yeah. Yeah, because now for the speed breaks that you're looking for, as far as, you know, doing next gen jumps for, you know, PC or home stuff, you're talking about completely different cooling systems and everything else like that to get over that hurdle. With this, that, you know, it reminds me of, Phil, and I'm sure you can appreciate this, reminds me of the graphics card boom in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you had the Voodoo 2 and all that stuff, and then all of a sudden it was like, holy shit, now here's the newest thing, and it's going to slap these polygons all over your face, neck, and chest twice. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's what this feels like, except it's not as pronounced as far as, like, the marketing of it. But it is that kind of jump where you're like, holy shit, look at what they're doing now compared to 2 years ago.
Yeah. So I guess this generation, we can basically say is, hey, it's here. This is what
we got. It's transitional.
Yeah. I guess we could call it a show for now. Anyways, for Patrick Mifflin, who apparently dropped out for some reason, I'm Filippo D'Anolfo.
I'm Chris Logie.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
And we'll see you next week.
Just tell us, Nintendo.